So, margin, I am pondering whether we know how to live anymore, to really live, or whether someone has taken away our lives, or something, or some power greater than us. And I think Jesus is offering us something that is a gift to the rest of the world, and I think we have a chance, but I think that we have so lost the thing that he wants to offer us that we can't even imagine our lives with it, with the gift that he wants to give us. He says, come to me, all you who are heavy laden. Come, put my yoke upon your shoulders, come along, yoke yourself to my way of life, my lifestyle, and I will give you the thing that your heart longs for, deeply longs for, which is rest, purpose, security, assurance. Come to me and you will find this. Everyone else will offer you many other ways to find this deeply powerful thing that you long for, but if you come to me, I will give it to you. This is my promise to you. It's why I've come. I've come to give you my rest. Which of these two lists reflects you? There's one which is restlessness, and there's one which is restfulness.
Margin, slowness, quiet, deep relationships, time alone, delight, enjoyment, clarity, gratitude, contentment, trust, working from love, work as contribution, or busyness, hurry, noise, isolation, crowds, distraction, envy, confusion, greed, discontentment, anxiety, working for love, and work as accumulation and accomplishment. Or which side are you on? There seems to be a restlessness amongst us, and certainly I notice this in myself. So when I'm speaking these things, I'm learning how to speak to myself, or I'm just so hungry for this myself. So, but there is such a strong restlessness, and this comes from our deepest desires. And we, in order to diagnose the way that we live at the moment, we need to work backwards to say, what's the driver? And the driver for all of this is our desires, our longings for all sorts of things. Aquinas, the 13th century Dominican monk, who may or may not have looked like the picture in the picture. It's just, that's me doing my morning quiet time. That is just, that's exactly what it looks like. He pondered. He was a philosopher as well as everything else. Amazing man. He pondered, what would it be to have a heart satisfied? What would it look like? How could you get to a point where you could be totally satisfied? What would you need to experience? And the answer to his question, what would it take to satisfy human desire, was everything. You would need to experience every mountaintop experience. You would need to experience every single person. You'd need to taste every single food from every single restaurant in High Street, Reigate. You'd need to, and all the others as well. You'd need to experience every single joy in life. You'd need to experience the whole of life in order for our hearts to be. That's an interesting answer to the question, isn't it? And what he's getting at there is this idea that there is an infinite desire placed within us. There is this thing within us that just can't be satisfied. Anyone recognize this? Anyone over 70? Yeah. Or just for those next stage down. But I still haven't found. Yeah. Yeah, you're beautiful, wonderful. You see, there's this longing, and most of our music declares this longing, but it keeps on going and it doesn't get satisfied. You might climb to the mountains, you might taste everything, but you still feel like there's more. Infinite desire and a finite life leads to restlessness. This is the diagnosis of our restlessness. And we need to know it, because when we recognize our restlessness, we try and control our restlessness and sort it out. But we often try and fill it with more things. Have you noticed that? Our restlessness leads us to more and a desire for more. But the moreness doesn't satisfy our restlessness. It's because we have an infinite desire inside us, placed by a God who is remarkable. Dallas Willard says, desire is infinite, partly because we are made by, these beautiful words, partly because we are made by God, made for God, made to need God, and made to run on God. I love that phrase. That's how we're made. That's the very DNA of every single human being. And then he goes on to say, we can be satisfied only by the one who is infinite, eternal, and able to supply all our needs, as we sang a moment. You are all I need. Who is infinite, eternal, and able to supply all our needs. We are only at home in God. When we fall away from God, the desire for the infinite remains, but it is displaced upon things that will certainly lead to destruction. John Mark Comer, whose book I've been encouraging you to read, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, we've run out of copies. Go and buy it on Amazon or your favorite bookstore. We need to put our desire in its proper place, on God, and put all other things we desire below God. And this is the challenge of all humanity. This has always been the challenge of humanity, even from the very beginning, the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Do they put their desire on God and find Him as the source and meaning and purpose and focus of their lives, or do they find it somewhere else? Do they trust each other? Did He really say, is the question that the enemy will want to tempt you with every single day? Did He really say He can satisfy you? No. Go to the sports page. Or maybe that's just me. And we put all other things, and of course we recognize that these things cannot satisfy us. Augustine says, Thou hast made us for Thyself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it finds its rest in Thee. What are these guys, all the way from beginning of time, all the way through, telling us? Here's a psalmist. As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, my God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. Where can I go and meet with God? This seems to be the essence of what it means to be a human. We have this infinite desire, and our infinite desire will only be met by the infinite God, the maker of heaven and earth. But in contrast to this, our default setting, having been rewired away from this, finding our soul's home in God, it is now post-Eden, is not atheism, to discount God, but idolatry. It is to aim our desire not at God, but at stuff that is ultimately unsatisfying. And so we live in a town of idols. We live in a culture of idols. We live in a world of idols. And they offer us satisfaction. No one has to waken desire within you. We watch telly with desire. We don't have to switch that bit on. But the desire just comes at us. The fulfillment of desires comes at us. And we choose it again and again and again. We displace our longing for the infinite and we put it in finite things. And everything will let us down until we find our rest in Him. So this desire thing leads us into restlessness, and it leads us into hurry, which leads us into exhaustion and disconnection, which leads us into yet more restlessness. And so the cycle of the world goes round. Does it resonate with any of you in the way that the world is at the moment? All of this is exacerbated, says John Mark Comer, in our cultural moment of digital marketing. There are thousands of images given to us every single moment of every single day. From a society built around two things, he says, accumulation and accomplishment. If you sit with people for very long, it won't take you long to notice the conversation moving towards a conversation about their accomplishment, who they are, what they've done, or what they've accumulated in some way in their life. As if these things would satisfy us, and we are discovering that they don't. There's this guy called Meyer Friedman in the 1950s, a cardiologist, heart guy, and he was worried for the number of people who are suffering from heart conditions. That was his speciality, and he coined the phrase hurry sickness. Anyone heard of that? Well, this is how he would describe it. Hurry sickness is a continuous struggle and unremitting attempt to accomplish more and more things, or to participate in more and more events in less and less time. And this is before the internet. So this is the diagnosis of our lives at the moment. You live in a hurry-sick world. We are caught up in a hurry-sick culture, and we ourselves permeated by a hurry-sick spirit. It is very hard for us not to hurry. And when someone tells you not to hurry, you want to punch them. Or maybe that's just me. I'm supposed to take joy in the fact of a long queue at Morrison's. Nothing more irritating. When the person swipes and then talks. Don't talk, just swipe. Come on, Maureen, hurry up. You're lovely, but I'm in a hurry. I have no idea what that means. Yeah. This is our culture. And the reality is that we've inducted our children into this very thing. And we notice that they too are suffering from sicknesses, hurry sicknesses, and their mental health is suffering too. And the things that we give them as presents in their pockets that they sleep next to at night are the very things that are causing them the most pain in their lives. So, the culture is spiritually forming us into restlessness, whereas discipleship to Jesus spiritually forms our souls into rest. Anyone want to be a disciple? The invitation, come, be my disciple, take my yoke upon you, learn, I will give you my rest. It's the deal. We can move from one side of the graph to the other. We can become people who move from anxiety to contentment and so on. But the way that Jesus does this, and this is where we will hit against his reality in our lives, is he says, my way of living is to have margin. Now, Jesus came to his own people and he spoke out in many ways against the things that he was seeing, the poisons or the things that were wrong within the culture of his day and the people of his day, and the faithfulness of Israel was being tested. And we need to wonder what he would say to us in our day. And I think very simply he would say, you need to find margin in your life. You need to adopt this pattern of Sabbath that my Father gave the world. You need to become a Sabbath people. This is not optional for you. If you want to take this is what my yoke looks like. It is a day. You need to find a way of being a Sabbath people. Sabbath, you know the word Shabbat. It means to stop. You need to stop. Pausing for effect. Anyone irritated for the length of time? Wondering how long he's going to go on for? I'm fine, I've got the whole day. The truth is, the story starts with Well, the story starts with 6 days of amazing creation. But the climax of that creation was a day of stopping. And it is remarkable to me that God stopped. What did God do on the seventh day? Just enjoyed his creation. He did not make anything, try and fill it with anything. He'd done all of that. He just stopped. Thus, the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So, on the seventh day, he Shabbated. He Sabbathed. He rested on the seventh day from his work. And this is the idea that comes back up again in the commandments, the fourth commandment, thou shalt honor the seventh day and keep it holy and distinct. And it goes back, remember the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath, like, because we'll forget this. Remember the Sabbath, and because God himself rested. And if it's good enough for God, or needed enough for God, well, who are we? Sabbath is the very rhythm that God built into the fabric of creation. So he says to the people of Israel, remember the Sabbath, because, and it's interesting that phrase, isn't it? Because I think we have an amnesia about Sabbath. We forget it very quickly. And he just wants to go, hi, here it is again. Remember the Sabbath. Because when you go against the grain of the universe, you get splinters. And I think we're full of splinters as a culture and as a people. And I think we have a chance to maybe offer them something that they really, our culture really wants and longs for. The Creator God is inviting us to join him in his rhythm, the interplay of work and rest. And when we don't accept his invitation, we reap the consequences: fatigue, burnout, anxiety, depression, busyness, starved relationships, worn down immune systems, low energy levels, anger, tension, confusion, emptiness. These are the signs of a life without rest. So I think Jesus would come and say, stop. In God's name, stop. Shabbat. Rest. Sabbath is not dependent on our readiness to stop. We do not stop when we have finished. We do not stop when we complete our phone calls, finish our emails, get through this stack of messages, or get out this report that is due tomorrow. We stop because it is time to stop. That's a quote from this rather beautiful book called Sabbath: Finding Rest, Renewal and Delight in Our Busy Lives by a guy called Wayne Muller. Really recommend it. It's beautiful. It's one of those tender books that draws you in on a story. It's not difficult to read. The chapters are quite short. It's quite meditational, but it invites you in a language and a way that makes you really want it. Because I think many of us hear the phrase Sabbath and the idea of having a rest like it's a hard thing, like it's a punishment for us, like it's a God of rules, like it's a thing saying don't do something, like you're being told off. And that's the twisting, that's the enemy twisting, which is this gift that he created, right, put into the way that the world works. And he says, look, here is the gift. I want to give it to you. So we need to have people speak to us about it as a gift. And this guy, Wayne, and he just says, you'll never find a time when it's right to stop. You'll never find it. So just let the rhythm of the week come round and hit the day of stopping and stop. If we refuse to rest until we are finished, we will never rest until we die. And that's called stopping. Ultimately, Sabbath wins. Sabbath dissolves the artificial urgency of our days because it liberates us from the need to be finished. You know, we are finite people. We will never get everything done. We need to live in our bodies in a finite way And God has given us this rhythm of stopping. But of course, to this invitation, we say we cannot stop. And this could be, say, something like we do defiantly. We cannot stop. I'm not stopping. And people have said this to me. They tell me off for preaching on this, as if I don't understand their lives. And the truth is, I don't understand all of the lives, the things you carry, and there are many things that you need to do. But I do wonder whether there's something within us that just wants to defy God's rule and reign. And I wonder why we do this. But there's also this thing, I can't stop. It's like, even if I wanted to, I couldn't. And this is me. I want to stop, but I'm finding it hard to stop. Anyone else? I'm trying the practice of Sabbath, but my practice is not very good. We are often terrified of painful grief that is hot to touch, sharp and piercing. So we keep moving faster and faster. So we will not feel how sad we are, how much we have lost in this life. Strength, youthfulness, playfulness, so many friends and loves, dreams that did not come true, all that has passed away. When we stop, even for a moment, even for 10 seconds at the beginning of a service, we can feel that burning empty hole in our belly, so we keep on moving, afraid that the empty fire of loss will consume us, says Wayne. And I think he speaks to me. Jesus said, the Sabbath was made for man, for us. It was a gift for us. It's here, have it. You don't earn it. It's okay, it's free. And it's free for everyone, including your ox, if you have one. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me. Where does he lead me? Into busyness? No. The clock is not your shepherd. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. So Jesus says, get some margin in your life and do it now. Start. Which is the opposite of stopping. And I only noticed this when I was putting my thing in. And I thought, ooh, I can't even say do it without starting something. Yeah. He wants you to start stopping. Thanks for getting that, Nigel. I appreciate that. Really, honestly, he wants you to start doing this thing. Don't ignore it. Try not to do it next week. Start today. Find a time today when you can start stopping. You haven't planned stopping yet. You're not thinking about stopping. You've got a list of things. And already you're being irritated as you begin to mull on what they are. Start stopping. Start now. Plan for next week. How can you make it different? And we may dwell on this a bit more tonight, a few tips tonight about how to plan your Sabbath. But Sabbath could be a kind of like Jewish Sabbath, a Friday night all the way through to Saturday. That could be one way of doing a Sabbath. Or you might want to do the Lord's Day Sabbath, which is our Sunday, which is a great way of doing it. Or you may not be able to do that because you do some kind of shift work or something like that. And so you might need to do a midweek Sabbath. I do a midweek Sabbath because I work on Sunday. At least that's what I call this. But start. Start with rest. It sounds so easy, doesn't it, rest? But it's really hard. And as I stop on my Sabbath, I am so driven to do something else other than just rest. Start with rest. Find something that is restful, which doesn't mean YouTubes. Sometimes it means going for a walk and having a glass of wine and things like that, but it doesn't mean filling yourself with activities of some kind, even if they sound like they are more restful than what you do normally. Rest is rest. Start with God, light a candle, pray a prayer, read a psalm. Don't push yourself too hard. Don't try and become a spiritual guru. Just pray a little prayer at the beginning of your Sabbath. Ask God into it. Ask him to help you. And then chill out with him. Start with others. The joy of the power cut. Do you remember this? In the 70s. When everything got broken. And what did that do to us? Well, we can all remember those nights because it drew us together around a candle and nothing could happen, and the TV went off. It happened to Tim Leesk this week, and he told me that it was one of the best days of his life in recent days because there was nothing to be done. And he found that he and Mitzi quite liked each other after all. I think I've made that bit up, actually, I think. Yeah, don't quote him on that, so. Oh no, I've made a mistake now. You're going to tell him, aren't you? Though? I just got a feeling from him that in stopping, he found himself and he found his wife, and that was good. Start with others. And start for others. And this is a message to anyone who cares for the next generation. If you're a grandparent, if you're a parent, in God's name, do it for your kids. Find a way of stopping so that your kids' lives are not robbed from them. They need rhythm. They're made to live in rhythm with God. Do it for the sake of the kids. Let's become a church that knows how to stop so that our children can be liberated from the tyranny of always being switched on. Amen.